This is Lovecraft Country Chronicles, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please welcome your hosts, Mia Johnson and Natalie Zamora.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Lovecraft Country Chronicles podcast. My name is Natalie Zamora, and I'm joined by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mia Johnson.
Today, we're going to do one of our bonus episodes again, and though sadly we don't have a special guest with us today, I think we're still going to have some fun and maybe educate people who are listening.
Yeah, I was excited to. This one has like kind of been like in the back of our minds, like we wanted to do this, but we've had so many guests that it was like, you know, we kept pushing it back further and further. So it's kind of a, you know, it's still a winning situation, I would say.
Yeah, I'm excited. So for everyone listening, this episode, we're going to talk about Easter eggs in Lovecraft Country because there are so many and it seems like impossible to get them all in our weekly recap episodes. And when I was putting together a list of them, like, I was just so overwhelmed because there are so many in every single episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing that it is an Easter egg, because I'm pretty sure, I think not a single one of these that I've gotten, maybe one. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, yeah, they do a really, really good job of hiding these things in. And it's kind of like when you go on Twitter, you start to have this scavenger hunt and it's like people are chiming in and seeing, you know, claiming the things that they see. So I'm excited to, you know, for us to reveal this to some of the people who, you know, either maybe are not on Twitter as often or you just don't see these things. These are going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited. So before we get into the Easter eggs, we do want to recommend a podcast to our listeners. So if you're like us and appreciate some laughter with your scares, then there's a podcast you need to check out. Each week, comedy horror podcast called My Neighbors Are Dead talks to the lesser known characters from your favorite horror films as played by guests from the world of comedy, horror, and beyond. So if you ever wanted to hear from the neighbors at 9 Cloverfield Lane, or what if we told you Michael Myers wasn't the worst patient of Dr. Loomis, listen in as host Adam Peacock talks to those just outside the terror with such guests as Tawny Newsom, Paul F. Tompkins, Dwayne Perkins, and more. You can check out My Neighbors Are Dead on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. Yeah, we've got some we've got some neighbors. Yay! Some horror friends out there. So we recommend you go give them a listen if you want to really, you know, go forth and get some more horror goodies.
Totally. Okay, so let's jump into the Easter egg. So I kind of just have these in order of the episodes, not really in order of importance, but right in the first episode, right in the beginning, the Denmark Vessi's bar, I had not heard of this person, admittedly, but so in episode one, Atticus goes to the local bar where his dad Montrose often goes to go and see, you know, why hasn't he been there? Where's he? Been. So Denmark Vessi was a real person. So he was a slave who was accused and convicted of rebelling, and he was actually executed in 1822. Yeah. So that's something that, you know, I didn't learn in school. That's something I had to do some research on. Had you heard of him?
Yeah, that's one of those things where maybe not necessarily this because they hid it. Like they, you know, kind of did a good job of hiding it, but Lovecraft makes you think about these things that you usually, at least in American school systems, you're not really taught about. Yeah, that's reminding me of the Courtney B. Vance interview I did where I think I told the story before where he was like, yeah, a lot of people are just kind of ignorant to a lot of these things. And what is it, you know, like the victors write history or something like that. So it's really it's like now that we have all these resources to go back and to find these names and to put them out there like that. It's interesting, right? That we finally get to kind of go back through history and learn these types of things. So such as this person's name. And I think in a way it's a little honoring of them.
Yeah, totally. And now I'm like, every time there's a brand name or something, a restaurant, I'm like, I need to look it up to see if this is a person.
I bet it's like, I can only imagine just getting to be on set, how sort of fun it is to be like, how many little things can we drop in there?
Yeah.
I think we're both like creative people. So, you know, like we get to write and maybe you might like be able to put a pun and a headline or something like that. But I think it's really cool to be like on the set of something and you have this opportunity to do some name drops or to set up these sequences that look like certain pictures. Yeah, kind of like when we talked to the cinematographer, Michael Watson, how he's talking about, you know, where he draws his inspiration from and all of that. Maybe we should try it. Can we like go and, you know, go on set one day and like give them some opinions on what we want to do? Just have some fun, let loose.
So much thought goes into it that like you wouldn't like, I mean, I wouldn't even think of like, I wouldn't think like, oh, let's name the bar something that actually means something. I'd be like, all right, it's already up there. Let's just keep it as is.
And I'm looking at the tweet that we have. With the picture of it. I just love how they were able to transform the street. Because this scene was actually filmed in Chicago. It says, filming today in the Lakeview neighborhood. It's insane how many people are involved and how much time it takes to set up one scene. This is from @JazLynn, who shared this photo back in July of, 2018.
Yeah, 2018. Isn't that crazy?
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, I know. I saw this tweet just because I saw that the Chicago Tribune did a piece about they transformed the, it was a dive bar called L&L Tavern, and they changed it. And then they like embedded her tweet in there. And I was like, oh my gosh, 2018.
Yeah, it really takes a long time because this article is from 2020 and the tweet is from 2018. So it goes to show how long it takes to do this stuff.
Man. Yeah. Wow.
That's really interesting. And of course, like I said, me being from Chicago, I always love this stuff. I'm not usually ever around in that neighborhood, so this particular bar doesn't ring a bell, but it's still, you know, it has that familiar Chicago style.
Yeah, that's cool. another Easter egg that's kind of just a little nod that I had no idea about either. I had to do research about this because I had never seen these photos. So Gordon Parks, a photographer, their photograph called Department Store, which it's in episode one. So they reference this. It's very like, I don't know how people recognized it, but they put it on Twitter. That's how I saw it. Yeah. So we'll get to who posted it. But so in episode one, when Atticus, Letitia, and George are on their way to find Montrose, they stop, you know, a few times. And it's when we have that James Baldwin speech sequence. Mm-hmm. It's just the montage of them and everywhere they go, it's kind of like the colored sign, colored entrance. And those two, the colored entrance that was like kind of in a neon color, and then just that little colored sign when they were getting, you know, food, that was just taken exactly from this photograph or the series of photographs by Gordon Parks. And it was part of a series called The Restraints Open and Hidden, and it was published in Life magazine. So at Mr. Algernon, sorry to you for mispronouncing, but he posted the side-by-sides and it's identical. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. And I've seen the picture of the woman and her mother before. That was kind of the big one that they were referencing.
Yeah.
Back in, did we say the year? What's the date on that Life magazine? Does it say September 24th, 1956.
So
more than 50 years almost to this day. When they say journalism, people went to journalism school because we can't do math. That's the truth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Totally. But anyway, yeah. Wow. Would that almost be like, what, some odd 70 years ago now to think about that? I always, not to get too off subject, I always think like we're still in 2000, so it makes it easy the 80s were 20 years ago, the 70s were 30 years ago, but that's not the case anymore. But yeah, to think about now how old this picture has grown. I've seen the picture of the mother and the child before, and to see how it was replicated in Lovecraft, it's just really brilliant. I'm like, oh my goodness.
I know. Yeah, it's exact and it's crazy. And I feel like it just makes the whole sequence even more powerful, even though it already was with the Baldwin speech. over it, you know, you're getting a feel of this is how Black people lived in the 50s. And then exactly. It's just awesome that this was a reference to, you know, a photographer back then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like using those scenes to, you know, those familiar scenes to invoke that feeling. Mm-hmm. If I'm being like an art, you know, aficionado or an aficionado of cinematography, mm-hmm. It really evoke those feelings of me. But gosh, yeah I love this.
Yeah.
It's awesome. A great find.
And I like to think, like, you know, Gordon Parks was actually taking a picture of, like, Letitia and Atticus. Aww, and Montrose yeah. there, like, yeah. just thinking about, you know, he took that picture in the show, I guess.
Yeah, that's funny really to cute. Think.
Okay, so the third Easter egg we have here is in episode 2 now, and this one is less of a nice homage. It's more of a creepy addition. Okay, so in episode 2... Atticus goes to explore the village in Artem when he kind of just like walks around to see what the town is like. Mm-hmm. He walks by a group of kids dancing around like what looks like a tree or like a wooden statue figure of a person maybe. Mm-hmm. And there's like red ribbon that they're pulling on. And I had to go back to rewatch this because I didn't remember it that well. It was so fast. But I saw people tweeting, of course, and I'll get to exactly who said it. But saying it could be a nod to the pagan maypole ritual, which is like about fertility. I did so much research on this maypole thing because it's so creepy. And I know they use it in like horror movies, The Wicker Man and Midsommar, and both of them are so creepy to me that I was like, oh God. Yeah, I saw that and I was like, okay, is that really it? And then I saw at Erica Joy had tweeted lots of themes about fertility. Did you see the maypole and procreation in this episode? So now I'm thinking like the whole fertility thing, like we don't know if Letitia's pregnant, but it seems that way. Like, is this some type of foreshadowing? I don't know.
I know. What are you guys saying?
That's really creepy.
That is an interesting theme that kind of like comes up a little bit, especially with who's this, the slave ancestor Hannah, with her being pregnant too. So there's this whole idea about that. For for some reason Letty came to mind, like, okay, is that like a foreshadowing of her maybe? But also because they were in the village, I was thinking about the Shoggoth that Christina helped bring into this world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were doing that, they were having a celebration for, you know, the Shoggoth's birthday.
That could be it. That's what I was thinking. Like, is this just an added creepy element to the episode or does it really mean anything?
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I think it's like with them, everything has intention. Like sometimes you might see something and it's really like, I'm just overthinking. I feel like every single detail of this is done with some sort of intention. So the heart of me wants to say that this was done for some certain reason, but I can't tell if it's just like to embody the whole theme of fertility and being like, hey, we've just got a lot of this going on in this show, or to foreshadow something like the Shoggoth or, you know, whatever could be happening with Letty.
Yeah. I feel like it just feeds into the whole common theme of the white people are very creepy and doing dark magic. Like the whole paganism thing with like sacrificing people. I'm like, is that gonna be foreshadowing too?
I honestly don't know because I've still I'm just as curious as everyone else, but
Yeah, that was just a really creepy one that I really didn't notice the first time around. I was like, oh God, even the kids, there's something wrong with them too.
Yeah, they're like, la, 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 just going around the pole.
Yeah, it's very, very odd. I don't know how I didn't notice that too, because it really looks like it's like a person, like a wooden thing, like the Wicker Man movie.
Now I need to go back and actually see that scene. I'm going to be watching all of these and like hitting pause with every little frame. Like, what is that?
I know. That's what you have to do with this show, apparently. So for our next one, this one I thought was really cool. So hat tip to the website GameSpot for this one, because I regret it there. And I had not seen anyone talking about this. So in episode 2, towards the end of the episode, where they're trying to drive away. And there's like this wall that comes up, not a literal wall, but you know, they can't go past it.
Yeah, like that force field thing.
Yeah, and that happens a few times in the show as well. But so at that time, the song Killing Strangers by Marilyn Manson is played. And at that time, like, I thought that was kind of, it didn't take me out of the moment, but I was kind of like, why are we listening to Marilyn Manson right now? It's kind of random. But actually, so the song that he wrote, Marilyn Manson, was inspired by his dad and the PTSD he faced after serving in the military during the Vietnam War. So I guess that is a tie-in, just because in that episode, you know, George and Letitia are thinking that Atticus is having really bad PTSD. That's why he remembers everything and they don't, because they think he's just making it up, or he saw it because he has PTSD. So, I mean, I don't think that's a... that's just like, that has to be on purpose, because why are we listening to Marilyn Manson?
I know. Wait, okay. I have to ask you first. Did you know, like, when you were watching this, that it was a Marilyn Manson song?
I did, but I usually listen to it. I usually watch it with subtitles, and it'll
so it tipped you off.
Yeah. So it'll say, like, it'll say like, Killing Strangers by Marilyn Manson is playing.
Okay. I was like, oh, I didn't know you were a fan, Adelie.
No, not really.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, I didn't either. And I didn't know the name of the song.
Yeah.
That was one of those things. I don't think I was paying attention to the lyrics either. I don't know if the lyrics of this specific song have anything that are for, I guess the lyrics of the song would, because of the subject matter that you just told me about.
Right. And I think like killing strangers, like killing people in war type of thing.
Yeah. I'm looking through the lyrics to Strangers right now. You better run, because we got guns. Oof. Oh, geez. Yeah. I mean, basically that's what was going on in that scene. Especially this was when Letty got shot.
Yeah.
It looks like it.
Like,
yeah.
Right before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. The connection, especially between, you know, having the father in the war. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess Atticus was in the Korean War, but, you know, time periods and things like that.
Yeah.
Gosh. Mm-hmm. I mean, just Marilyn Manson as a whole adds to the creepiness. Like,
yeah.
If you ever wanted a creepy somebody, you know, to back the vocals or to add music to this, go ahead and use Marilyn Manson.
Yeah. That was definitely, it made it very creepy. That's like something I was wondering, how do you think, because we've touched upon it a little bit, but just in general, how do you think that music has played a part in the show?
Because
there's so many newer songs, older songs, it's such a mix. And I feel like every song, you know, tells its own story to the scene, and it shapes the scene so much every time.
Yeah, they use song, because sometimes, you know, it's just regular score in the background, you know, violins or whatever they've got going on. But yeah, when they do use actual songs, I feel like it, in most cases, it really always adds to the intensity. I just remember when, you know, they used Cardi B, like Bodak Yellow, like, just, you know, she's got this, Ruby's got this boss energy.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of something else too, I can't remember. I feel like this was more well done than like, I think we talked about The Great Gatsby. They tried to use like hip hop and it was the 1920s. It just didn't, it doesn't feel this feels a lot more powerful when they use song in this, and it feels a lot more, you know, like a really deliberate choice and not just, hey, let's throw Jay-Z in here. Just so, you know, this could be cool and hip and modern.
Yeah, so we seem cool.
Yeah. So I really love their choice of song, even when I don't know it. And like I said, the one when, was it at the end with the episode with Montrose? I really like that.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. That was a second favorite scene. So I really like how they use music.
Yeah, I do too. I agree. And usually, like, I think, with The Great Gatsby, usually when movies and shows use a mix of old and modern, I kind of feel like not so great about it.
Yeah.
It usually is like, you know, like, all right, pick one. I don't know where we are right now, but this does feel like very intentional and it works.
Yeah. And it doesn't throw me out of the scene. Like, I know it's supposed to be the 50s and here we are using a song maybe from 2000 something. To me, it doesn't detract from anything. It doesn't feel out of place. I think I'd rather hear Cardi B than at most times, you know, some song from the 50s, because it just doesn't, it doesn't work. I think you can play with the use of music. And here I am again being, you know, like, oh, now I'm a music critique. But I think it really doesn't matter the time period so long as it fits. And now it's like this mixed media because you've got, you know, the movie and it's this from this year, and you've got the song and it's from this year. So there's a way for them to come together and juxtapose one another in a beautiful, harmonious way. I should have went to art school or music school. What am I doing?
I also think, like, it kind of, I mean, usually, you know, music, you can relate to music more, but like, I'm not saying nobody watching this is like people from the 50s that grew up. Sorry, I can't talk. People that grew up in the 50s, I'm sure are watching this show, enjoying it. But, you know, for people our age to hear modern music, it kind of like we have our own relation to it. It kind of means something to us. Whereas, like you said, a song from the 50s, it would be like, all right, it makes sense. But I don't know it kind of thing. Like, it doesn't touch me in a way that Bodak Yellow does.
It's hashtag relatable.
So maybe that was another reason. I'm not sure. So moving on to our next one.
This is number 5.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have Emmett Till. We talked about this a few times very briefly, but I actually didn't realize that there were more than just one reference to him. So I know we talked about in episode 3, he was playing the Ouija board with Dee and, you know, their group of friends. And he was wearing a similar outfit. A lot of people pointed that out on Twitter and were like, it has to be Emmett Till. But then also, in a later episode, Dee asks about when Bobo will be coming back from his trip, which I didn't know. I saw on Twitter was Emmett Till's nickname.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah. So, just for anyone listening, if you guys don't know who Emmett Till is or was, so he was a 14-year-old boy. He was murdered in 1955 after allegedly flirting with a white woman. There were no witnesses, apparently, but she said that he grabbed her and, you know, made advances towards her. So,
and this was in Mississippi.
Yeah, Mississippi, yeah. And so the woman, her name was Carolyn Bryant. Her husband and her brother brutally murdered Emmett Till. They beat him, shot him, tied him to a cotton machine with barbed wire, and threw his body into the river. So that is something I actually did learn about in school, thankfully.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is someone that, you know, has kind of lived on as, I feel like, a symbol just for brutality, for racism. They had, his mom decided to do an open casket funeral. And then I remember a magazine published the photos just so, you know, everyone could see exactly what's going on and the racism that is happening.
Yeah.
That's obviously terrible. And then the worst part of it all is that, I don't know what the worst part of it is, but then later on, the woman, Carolyn Bryant, confessed that it didn't happen. So he was, you know, innocent. And I think that's something that's happened so many times since and before.
Yeah.
And so I think he kind of just, it was a symbol and is a symbol for just the terrible things that, you know, people do out of being racist and the brutality and the violence. So it's terrible. So yeah, so he's in the show. We saw him once, I think, and now he's on this trip, which is, you know, the Mississippi trip. So do we think that they're going to explore this further? Do we want the show to, I mean, you know, this is something that wasn't in the book at all. It was just a choice for the show.
Okay. Yeah.
So do we think that they're going to include his murder in there? I feel like they have to at least reference it just because they have talked about him a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But like, how much do we want? Do we want it?
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like a mini arc in this, especially with his connection to Dee. Since that's her friend, it feels like that's something that they shouldn't leave open-ended.
Yeah.
It has to be addressed, I would say, at this point. Mm-hmm. Especially because it's like, okay, you know, act one of this is him with Dee and he's getting ready to go on the trip. Act two, as you found out, was Dee asking about his trip. And then I guess the act three would have to be something about, you know, what happens to him. Yeah. Do they find out what happens after him? How do people react to that? So that is interesting, which actually I think it's worth noting then, because all of the episode titles are out, mm-hmm. that the episode 8 title is Jigga Bobo, which mm-hmm. I didn't know that was his nickname. So now it kind of makes more sense. So I'm like, maybe it will have him.
Yeah.
You know, as they continue. But yeah, I do think that it's worth just having some sort of closing piece to acknowledge what happened to him and not just be, I wouldn't say it's an elephant in the room because we all know what happened, but just for the series at least to say something.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And usually, what do you think just about fictional shows that randomly include, you know, real life people from history? Because usually mm-hmm. I don't like it. I feel like it kind of is like, it depends on the show, but usually I feel like they're just forcing it, kind of.
Yeah.
But I do like it in this because it's subtle enough and it's not like they're, you know, changing the whole story to include him in it. Even though, you know, that would be fine too. But yeah, I don't think it, you know, is taking away anything from this show.
Right. Yeah. This is done really subtly, like, even as we talked about before, like just barely, you know, just mentioning Martin Luther King by his name or his, you know, mm-hmm. his original name. So not even showing him, which I think that's kind of, I feel like it would, you know, if it's like, ooh, are they going to throw in MLK or, I think we're a little bit ahead of Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. So that probably wouldn't be something they would do, but it just feels kind of distracting to really have them be in there. So I think this is really a nice subtle way to throw them in. Now, I feel like this past episode is an exception because Hippolyta herself, when she was going back in time to see someone like Josephine Baker, I think it adds to that because she was going back in time. So they were playing with that and they were making it fun. But yeah, I think this kind of treads nicely and just being something where it's like, okay, we're going to use this and use it with purpose too.
Yeah.
Right. Not just, oh, we're going to throw in Martin Luther King so everybody is happy or excited to see him. Like, like, you know, some kind of Nick Fury cameo in a Marvel movie. Yeah. You know, it's not like that. I think it's pretty tasteful. And again, it still leads you to want to know more about this history and want to know more about the things that like actually happened.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of like, even though with the Emmett Till storyline, we are waiting to just see how they close it up. It's not like another loose end that, you know, mm-hmm. needs a whole episode to cover, like the other plot lines that we're waiting to figure out.
All of the other plot lines.
Like this, I think they could, you know, conclude it in a nice, tasteful way.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, I'm interested to see what happens there for sure. Okay. And then for our next Easter egg, I have two in here about episode titles. I feel like most of them are referenced to stuff, but I think that, you know, some are more obvious than others. Mm-hmm. This one, so for Strange Case, which is episode 5, I did not realize this at first, but it's probably most likely referencing, referring to the book A Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, just based on, you know, everything that happens in this episode with Ruby. I didn't think of this just because, you know, I actually have not read that book. I just know the story and I just think of it as Jekyll and Hyde. I don't think, you know, Strange Case. Yeah. So that wasn't something that came to mind immediately, but if anyone listening doesn't know the story, you know, over the years, it's kind of turned into just like the trope of a two-sided personality, like one is good and one is evil. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that plays into the episode with Ruby turning into Hillary. I'm not sure if one is good and one is evil, but, you know, it's just that two-sided, like two parts of you. And, you know, you have like you're telling yourself, okay, I should do this. No, I should do that. You know, giving into temptation and all of that. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. What's interesting about that is I think when he becomes Mr. Hyde, it's kind of like he gets this different mind. I don't completely know, but right, it's like, oh, you become a different person. That's why when they're like, it's the case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, is because it's like, oh, you were this completely, you know, normal, nice person, and now you've turned into this monster.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say that Ruby, and this is interesting, that Ruby changes personalities subconsciously, right? Like, Dr. Jekyll, if he turns, he's not going to have any control over what he thinks or how he acts, because now he's just this new person. But it's interesting for Ruby because, yeah, she assumes this new body, but it's still Ruby, right? It's still the same mind, but she's consciously, you know, now she is acting like a white woman, where she can be, you know, maybe a little uppity, unfortunately, to the black clerk, salesperson or something like that. But I don't, I wouldn't say she is necessarily evil as when she turns into Hillary or the white woman. I do like that similarity though, between, you know, naming the book and that. I didn't know. I think that was the one where I was like, what does this title mean? I really, I kind of just brushed it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. I agree. I wouldn't say that Hillary is evil. It just, you know, it's the same Ruby, except she is free to do so many other things. So then our next one, we have a Candyman reference, which I didn't think of the first watch around in episode 5. But, you know, it makes sense. Candyman is, you know, a huge, huge movie for black horror. And then Jordan Peele is writing the new reboot of it, or the remake of it. So it makes sense. But so in episode 5, Montrose goes to Sammy's apartment. We see that he lives in Cabrini Green in Chicago, and that's the same setting that the movie Candyman takes place in. So that was pretty cool. I'm wondering, you know, is there some type of creepy, like, I'm trying to think, like, supernatural, like, twist to this, like, this area is cursed or something like that. Although, you know, Candyman, it takes place way later than this, so.
That would be a funny, a funny twist or a funny nod to that. Yeah. Which that's actually from where I'm living, like by car, like literally just a minute away. It's one of those neighborhoods that has really undergone gentrification in Chicago, because we've got really a, you know, like how they portray in the show, this split between North and South side. And of course, you know, there's still, you know, different mixes of races and stuff on all sides of the city. But that area in particular was a black side of the city. It's where Good Times was based. And over time, basically gentrification kicked in. It tore down, you know, all the projects and all those things. Like my mother's side of the family is North Side Chicago. So it's kind of like, this is the, I'm back in the area where we grew up now, but it's just like, it's completely different.
So different.
And you know, when they put a Whole Foods in, it's like,
it's gone.
Like,
it's completely changed.
I think the last time when I was in New York, I was like, oh, there's a Whole Foods in Harlem now. Wow.
Things are changing.
So yeah, that was interesting. I think the new Candyman movie is probably going to address that gentrification as well. But that's delayed, so I'm going to have to wait to see that.
Whenever that comes out. So then our next one, we're at number 8 now out of 10. So this is another episode title for episode 6, the Meet Me in Daegu, the one with Jaya, her episode. So I didn't even think about this. Just another one that's like, oh, wow, I probably shouldn't realize that. So anyone listening, if these, if this is too obvious for you, I'm sorry, but we're going to go over it. So it's, you know, a nod to the movie that she loves, the Judy Garland, Meet Me in St. Louis. So, you know, it's a play on that title. For whatever reason, didn't realize that, because when she was watching it, the movie in the beginning, I Googled what it was because I was like, all right, this is probably going to be important, but it mm-hmm. I still didn't connect the dots. But yeah, so I thought that was cute. You know, obviously we love that episode. So yeah. I'm a fan of the title now. And I think, you know, it kind of even more highlights, you know, the life that she's living and the life that she dreams of and the life that she wants, whether it really is in America or just, you know, in the movies,
mm-hmm.
in yeah. Hollywood, that kind of fantasy.
I'm smacking myself because I didn't put that together either. And when I saw it, when I saw the beginning of the episode, I was like, I've never seen Meet Me in St. Louis, but I knew that yeah. was what she was watching.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it came to mind because I knew that, like, episode of the title, I was like, you know, in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, meet me. But I still didn't put it together. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of funny. Yeah, I like that. And it, to me, it almost, if I were to find some, you know, symbolism out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like her wishing her life was a movie, you know, sing yeah. song like Judy Garland and, you know, Perfect and Christine. But it wasn't necessarily the case. It was not a Judy Garland movie, but, you know, like a Michael Myers movie.
Yeah,
not the comedian, the horror one.
yeah, that's true. Yeah, because she's desperately trying to get out of this yeah. life that she has, and yeah, and so that's why it's so sad when the movie's closed out.
I know.
The best character. Okay.
Right.
We could just have a whole episode about her, even though we did with the episode.
Yeah, I know. I can go on and on and on. I wasn't done and I'll never be done.
Just a fan club. Okay. So we're at number 9 now. Okay. So this one was really cool. I found this on Reddit. So in episode 7, when Hippolyta is driving, there's a really awesome scene where she's driving and then there's a black woman on a motorcycle and she drives up right beside her. And they like mm-hmm. wave happily and Hippolyta's like, hey, and she looks just very happy, you know, to see this woman. So I saw on Reddit, because I was thinking, you know, that has to be someone in history. Like, why are they focusing it on this other yeah. than, you know, it could just be a feel good moment. Yeah. But I think, you know,
yeah, it seemed to linger a little too long.
Yeah. So someone on Reddit was saying that it was supposed to be Bessie Stringfield. So I looked her up. She was the first African-American woman to drive on a motorcycle across the country solo. Oh,
all right.
And so I guess that's what she was doing. And she was also a motorcycle dispatch rider for the Army during World War II. So like, that's really cool, you know.
Yeah.
That was really fun. And I think, you know, I have this question of how do we think the scene, you know, how did it set the tone for the episode now that we know everything that Hippolyta went through?
Uh-huh.
So
yeah. Well, you can go ahead. We're way too polite on this.
I know.
I'll start by reading the comment from the original mm-hmm. poster on the Reddit thread, mm-hmm. which I think links to that, because this person gives an extra fact about Bessie. Mm. Where it says, Bessie made people believe she was born Jamaican to a Jamaican father and a Dutch mother, even though her records show she was born in North Carolina, makes mm-hmm. her appearance in the latest episode even more connected to the storyline about rebirth and becoming who you want to be, which, mm-hmm. again, it's like, whew, right over my head.
Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, exactly. It's she's a good symbolism, I guess, for, mm-hmm. you know, the start of Hippolyta starting her own journey, right? This, yeah. You know, woman, Bessie, was able to become something else and able to, I'm not sure if the purpose of that, if it was to free herself or to, you mm-hmm. know, to be able to do some things that she might not have been able to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like a, maybe another foreshadowing right for that episode.
I feel like it was definitely foreshadowing, you know, she's representing, you know, female rights, black rights, like a pioneer, yeah. definitely at that yeah. time. And so, you know, even if Hippolyta didn't know who she was or didn't really recognize it, it was probably subconsciously like, you know, this woman is doing this yeah. and I'm stuck at home. Even though she does love her life at home, it's also like, what could I do if I didn't yeah. have to, you know, be a housewife?
Yeah, a woman on a motorcycle. She's just going. I like how Hippolyta cheered her on, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cute. That was a good scene. I liked it. Okay, so we're coming now to our final Easter egg. So this one is obviously a very clear one, but I think it's just worth a full discussion about because we did talk about it for a second in our recap of episode 7. But we can't have an Easter egg list without this one, I don't think. So at the end of episode 7, Atticus comes back from, you know, the portal that Hippolyta was also in, but they were in two different ones. We don't know what he saw or what happened to him in there, but he comes back with the book titled Lovecraft Country. So, you know, this is the book. This is the show, and obviously the book that the show is based on. Yeah, I gasped for that part for sure. So it says that it's written by George Freeman. So what does that mean? Like, do we think Uncle George wrote the story that's currently happening? Like, could something have happened when he was with Hippolyta in that alternate universe that she's like, all right, this is what's happening. And then he somehow writes it and then they go back in time. Like, it's definitely a stretch for the amount of episodes we have left, but
yeah.
I really am, you know, I don't get it.
I know. Yeah. My brain is all like, what is going on? Like the one thing I could think about, I was like, I feel like this has happened before where somebody has a book and it's the title of the book you're reading. And then I remembered in Sherlock Holmes, like the very first book, the Scarlet, oh my goodness, A Study in Scarlet. I have a poster of that like on my back over there. So I was like, wait, what's that called again? On my wall. So that is like basically the way the Sherlock Holmes books are written is it's Dr. Watson who is writing about the mysteries of Sherlock Holmes. So he's technically supposed to be the author and you're reading the book that he published. And it's not really the case, but you know, for fiction's sake.
Right.
So I was like, oh, so it's almost like, are we reading the book that Uncle George published? And now somehow, you know, the books are overlapping and the stories are overlapping. Now my mind really hurts trying to think about, especially because we've got, you know, these portals and you can go to different dimensions and all these separate things. So that I'm really excited to see how that turns out because that made me really excited. I was like, things just really got meta over here. Like,
I know.
Whoa.
I know. That changed everything for me. I was like, all right, now there's like a whole other point of this show that is about to be explored in 3 or 4 episodes. But I'm a fan of it. I'm very interested to see how that's gonna turn out.
They've done a really good job. I think this list just shows that they put a lot of attention to detail in this, and we've still got what, like 2 or 3 more episodes left, so I don't even know what they're gonna pack into these next couple episodes.
I know we have so many questions.
And you know, before I forget this, I was gonna say that's the fun part too, because they get to add in things that weren't necessarily a part of the book. Like you said, like the Emmett Till storyline, or like you can't have music in a book.
Yeah.
You know, you get to add these different layers of dimension to it. So this is a really fun ride.
Yeah, totally. I agree. So do we have any closing thoughts besides that? I mean, I need to just like go through and rewatch all of these parts of the Easter eggs and then see how I feel and then probably discover 20 more. There are so many.
I'm going to have to like really dig through the Reddit. I'm going to have to really dig through Twitter. I wish they had like an interactive thing on like HBO Max or something where it would show you little pop-ups like here's this thing and here's that thing. Or you know what? They usually do this for a lot of the HBO shows where like Game of Thrones or Westworld, where they have a behind the scenes. I haven't seen any behind the scenes. I don't know if that's been uploaded yet, but I would love to like see a making of either episode by episode or just like a general, you know, making of.
So. Yeah. They usually do like the after the episode too, but they haven't done it with this, right? I haven't seen any.
Yeah. So, maybe a little hint at our friends over on HBO to provide us with some more content, please. We ask humbly.
Okay, awesome. Well, for everyone listening, please make sure to give us a good review and ask your questions on Apple or tweet at us because we always want to hear your theories and your questions and anything you've got for us. Thank you so much for listening,
and we'll see you next time.